All right.
Hello.
Hi, guys.
Welcome back
to the Flick Chicks podcast.
I'm Jane.
And I'm Allison.
And how are you, Allison?
I'm good. I am excited to talk about the movies we're talking about today. We're going to be recording, obviously, on this precious. Mm-hmm. And we're also recording our Patreon episode, which is American Son.
Which is a Netflix movie.
It's a Netflix movie based on a play that was on Broadway for a while. And it's good. It's like, these will be like the first black films we've talked about that are like not based on real people.
Yeah.
But also it's just very upsetting.
It's both of these movies are very upsetting.
Very upsetting, and like the more I look into it, the more upsetting it is.
Yes.
Yeah. It doesn't get less upsetting as I learn. It gets more upsetting.
Yeah, that's about how it works, isn't it?
The real life circumstances surrounding the making of these films are way worse than the film.
Yeah. Both of these films are great, by the way.
Oh, they're really good.
Worse in the sense that they're very upsetting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, not happy.
See, I was okay, and then I was doing some research for this film, and I discovered that this film is the first nominee for Best Picture by a black filmmaker. This was released in 2009.
I literally, I was alive and I remember this film being released. Like, I didn't see this film when it came out.
We probably were way too young.
Way too young. Like, 12.
Yeah.
But I do remember people talking about it.
I do too. I remember, like, the Oscars and, like, winning.
Yeah.
Being nominated.
And I remember, like, my grandma talking about this film because she watched it and really liked it. Mm-hmm.
Anyway, it's very upsetting, but it's directed by Lee Daniels, and it's based on the novel Push by Sapphire.
Yes.
So yeah, it is not based on real life, but obviously the themes are very real to a lot of people.
People, yeah. Yep. Other than that, my cat is sick.
He's sniffly.
He has an upper respiratory infection. And also loose stools, although we're not sure why, so we're just giving him generic diarrhea medication. So we'll see if that fixes it. Luckily, he's a good cat, and he's doing okay.
Yeah.
You helped me give medicine earlier.
He was pretty good about it.
I mean, he wasn't happy.
No.
But he wasn't, he didn't, like, fight.
Yeah, he didn't bite me or anything.
No, he was good. So, God help me if I have to give my other cat medicine. He will not be so good.
He's more of a crackhead.
Yeah. Yeah, he's got a lot of energy, that's for sure. This other one, he's more laid back, so. I guess I'm glad he's the one that's sick if one of them had to be sick.
Definitely. He's definitely the easier one to give medicine to.
Give medicine to. But, yeah, I mean, that's, my whole day's been the vet and then researching these movies, which is horrible.
Yeah, it's really depressing.
Yeah.
But we're excited to talk about them because they are both very good movies.
Yes. So, I already want to talk about just Precious, the plot synopsis.
Definitely.
Does not go into great detail.
So, yeah, I was reading the Wikipedia, like, article on it or whatever, and I was like, wow, this really, like, glosses over a lot of the plot.
Yeah.
Because a lot of the plot is establishing, like, Mary and Precious's relationship.
Yeah, and the, like, abuse that she suffers at the hands of her mother and father. So, yeah, this will definitely be going into more of that.
Yeah.
Because it definitely, like, glosses over it. But I'm assuming if you're listening to this, it's because you've seen the movie, and so you know the kinds of topics we're going to be talking about. But
also, we should probably, we talk about serious subjects a lot, but we would like to warn you guys that this episode will contain a lot of talk about rape, molestation,
incest,
teenage pregnancy, what else is there?
Like physical HIV. Abuse, yeah, AIDS.
Just really upsetting things.
I'm assuming you've seen the movie if you're listening to this, and so you get the themes.
Yes.
But just a quick reminder of the theme, maybe it's been a bit since you've seen the movie. There are some pretty heavy themes in this that we are going to talk about, so yeah, that's a good old content warning coming up for you.
So the film stars Gabourey Sidibe, who is wonderful. You probably know her from Coven. She plays Queenie.
American Horror Story. couple seasons.
Mm-hmm.
Or from this.
She's a Best Actress nominee, and Monique won for her role as Mary, her mother.
Yes. And Jeffrey Fletcher won for Best Adapted Screenplay.
Very cool.
Becoming the first African-American to ever win a screenplay award at the Oscars.
2009.
Everyone.
2009. 11 years ago.
You know what? I would say the Tonys are better. They did award African-Americans a lot sooner for Best Play, but certainly there's only been four in the history of ever, so.
Yeah. Better, but not great.
Better, but not great. I feel like at this point, the Oscars probably has overtaken them.
Yeah.
On, like, Black awards.
Probably. Yeah.
So, plot.
Woo!
In 1987, 16-year-old Precious lives in the Harlem neighborhood of New York City with her unemployed mother, Mary, who has long subjected her to physical, verbal, and sexual abuse. Precious has also been raped by her now-absent father, Carl, resulting in two pregnancies. The family resides in a Section 8 tenement and survives on welfare. So, yeah. The first part of the movie is basically just establishing that Precious is, like, a very quiet girl who has, like, a desire to learn, who, like...
Really good at math.
Really good at math, enjoys education.
Really likes her teacher.
Teachers, loves school.
Yeah.
But she's just not super educated.
Because she just doesn't have, like, the resources.
Exactly.
Or, like, a supportive
home life at all. Yeah, but she very much enjoys...
Learning.
And then you see that, like, contrasted with her home life. Because basically the beginning of the movie is the principal calls her in and is like, are you pregnant again?
Mm-hmm.
And she just doesn't say anything. And she's like, Precious, you're 16. This is going to be your second child. Answer me. Are you pregnant? And Precious basically says, yes, I am. Like, in so many words. Yes, I'm pregnant. And the teacher's like, okay, this is a real problem. Like, you can't keep going to this school if this is going to happen. By the way, not realistic.
You can't kick someone out for being pregnant.
You literally can't.
Anyway.
Like, what?
But, like, the principal's like, you need to tell me if something's going on at home.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems like Precious wants to tell her,
but doesn't. And so then we meet her mom.
Mary.
And they live in this pretty gross little house.
Mm-hmm.
And...
Her mom throws stuff at her.
Literally just on, like, the drop of a dime, like, will get angry. Precious cooks, she cleans... Mm-hmm.
Does everything for her mom. Her mom just sits in front of the TV.
Yeah, and her mom basically uses Precious to get welfare so she doesn't have to work. And then also we notice that, like, she doesn't have another child there. So, like, you're kind of like, what
happened to the other kid?
So her first child, daughter Mongo, short for Mongoloid, has Down syndrome and is being cared for by Precious's grandmother, though Mary forces the family to pretend that Mongo lives with her and Precious so she can receive extra money from the government.
Yeah, there's a whole scene where, like, they organize for the grandmother to come over with the baby so they can put on this show or whatever.
Yeah, and it's, like, also, like, I can't... Her grandma seems like a very good, like, caretaker.
But she's very scared of Mary.
Of Mary, which I'm like, why?
You're her mom.
You're her mom.
Mary's a scary lady.
I mean, don't get me wrong. Mary's insane. She will... she has no problem...
Yeah.
...beating up on some people.
Yeah, she...
She also very emotionally abusive. Like, she makes fun of Precious's weight. She calls her stupid.
And makes her eat.
Yeah, she'll, like, make fun of her weight, but then force her to, like, eat even when she's not hungry.
Yeah.
Which is a form of abuse that a lot of people don't talk about.
And Mary also sexually abuses her. She makes her, like, finger her and stuff, which is very upsetting.
So, when Precious's second pregnancy is discovered, her high school principal arranges for her to attend an alternative school, where she hopes Precious can change her life's direction. Precious finds a way out of her traumatic daily life by escaping into daydreams in which she is loved and appreciated.
She's like a movie star in her fantasies.
She's famous.
Yeah.
So, inspired by her new teacher, Blue Rain, Precious finally learns to read and write. So we're skipping a lot of time here, but...
She goes to the school, the alternative school, and she meets a lot of kids who, like, come from similar home lives as her.
Yeah, there a lot of them have children.
They're, you know, underprivileged teens.
Uh-huh.
And she gets, you know, she starts becoming friends with them, and Blue Rain, her teacher, you know, kind of takes an interest in her and realizes that Precious is illiterate. Mm-hmm. And so she begins teaching her how to read. And Precious learns really quickly,
mm-hmm.
and she's working up to reading at a high school level.
Yeah, and they have to write every day in, like, these journals, and she reads them and writes back, like, that's, like, one of their big things. So she sporadically meets with a new social worker, Miss Weiss, played by Mariah Carey.
She's really good in it.
She is really good in it.
I was like, is that Mariah Carey?
Who learns about the sexual assault in the household when Precious reveals who fathered her children. When Precious is in the hospital giving birth to her second child, Abdul, she meets John McFadden, played by Lenny Kravitz.
Yeah.
A nursing assistant who shows her kindness, and she develops a crush upon him.
We thought that he was, like, coming on to her, but he's not. He's just a nice guy.
Yeah. At first we were like,
what are you doing? But then he just kind of is nice to her.
Upon returning home, Mary asks to hold Abdul. When Precious's back is turned, her mother purposely drops baby Abdul on the ground and attacks her, angrily declaring that Precious's revelation about the abuse has resulted in them being cut off from welfare. Precious fights back and runs away with Abdul while Mary tries to drop the television set on them. This is a very tense, scary, scary scene.
Scary, scary. As soon as she, like, comes into the house, right, like, it's just dread. Because you know that Mary is not gonna, like...
lay down.
Yeah, it's really upsetting. So when she, like, hands her Abdul, and then she drops him.
Oh, you're like, I thought she was gonna bash his head in.
Or, like, burn a cigarette in his face or something.
I know. And I was like, okay, just dropping him is, like, almost a relief.
Yeah.
Then she tries to kill them with a television set. Yeah. So there you go. She eventually breaks. So this is Precious. Eventually breaks into her school classroom for shelter. When Miss Rain discovers them the next morning, she frantically calls local shelters looking for a safe place for Precious and Abdul to live. But they end up staying with Miss Rain and her live-in lesbian girlfriend. The next morning, Miss Rain takes her and Abdul to find assistance for them. Precious will be able to continue her schooling while she raises Abdul in a halfway house.
Mm-hmm.
Mary soon returns to inform Precious of her father's death from AIDS.
Oof.
Precious learns that she is HIV positive, but Abdul is not.
Oof.
Feeling dejected, she steals her case file from Miss Weiss's office. As she shares the details of her file with her fellow student, she begins to hope for the future. Later, Precious meets with her mother, who brings Mongo and Miss Weiss's office. Miss Weiss confronts Mary about her and Carl's abuse of Precious. Mary tearfully confesses that she's always hated Precious for stealing her man and by letting him abuse her and eventually making him leave. We find out that the abuse went back all the way to when Precious was 3 years old.
Yeah. Oscar-winning performance, that scene, though, by Monique. Oh, my gosh. She, like, blows it out of the water.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Precious tells Mary that she finally sees her for what she really is and tells her mother that she will never see her or the children ever again.
Yes!
Leaving with both Mongo and Abdul. Mary begs Miss Weiss to retrieve her daughter and her grandchildren, but Miss Weiss silently rejects her and walks away. Precious plans to complete a GED test to receive a high school diploma equivalency. She walks out into the city with both children in tow, ready to start a new life and have a brighter future.
Mm-hmm. It's a really beautiful movie.
So sad.
But so sad. Oh my gosh. Like, we audibly gasp, like, so much in this movie.
Oh my god. Intense. Yeah. I mean, I think, obviously, Precious as a character is very, very interesting. But I definitely don't think it's a mistake that Monique won for Best Supporting Actress.
Like, yeah, definitely.
That scene where they're in the office and she's describing to Miss Weiss how her husband abused her daughter and how she wasn't okay with it, but how she was so mad at Precious. Basically, the way she describes it is, like, she's jealous of Precious, I guess. Because to her, it's like her husband would rather
have sex with her daughter
than with her. But it's like, well, no, your husband's a pedophile.
Yeah, he's just an abuser. and actually, in my experience with working with people who have been, like, sexually abused as children and then later will come out and, you know, tell, obviously, Mary knew the whole time.
Right.
But, you know, when they finally tell their parents or whatever, like, the moms will be so upset and jealous and be like, you know, you asked for it. You seduced him. You seduced my husband.
Yeah, it's like, no.
Baby. No, a child can physically not seduce an adult.
No. No. There is nothing a child could do to make me sexually attracted to that child.
Exactly. Literally,
the easiest part of my day, every day, is not being attracted to children. Okay? From the time I get up, it's a non-issue.
It's a non-issue.
It's never an issue, ever. So, the idea that a child could make it an issue, it's like, maybe the adult has some issues. But yeah, I mean, that's what I mean, I feel like, okay, this obviously isn't based on a true story. Like, any one particular person's true story.
Yeah, yeah.
But it is, like, a very real reality that, like, a lot of times parents are quite aware of the abuse happening by other parents and don't do anything because they somehow, like, justify it that it's their kid's fault.
Yeah.
And even, like, Mary does say, she says in the lines of, like, I asked him what he was doing.
Yeah, what are you doing to my baby? What are you doing to my baby?
And he basically told her to shut up. And she's like, and I did. And it's just more like, it's like it starts with this, like, kind of fear of speaking out, and then it turns into, like, this resentment of your own child.
Yeah.
Because you feel like somehow, like, I mean, I guess it's something you have to reconcile yourself. It's like, well, if you don't stop him, you're just as much at fault.
Exactly.
As he is. I mean, not just as much, but certainly at fault.
And, I mean, Mary also sexually abused
Precious. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Exactly.
Because she was like, who was gonna make me feel good?
Oh, yeah.
Ugh.
Yeah, because her husband leaves her.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's horrible. Also, she's upset because Precious is able to have more children than her with him, which is another, like, jealous aspect of it.
Yeah, she's like, I can only have one kid, but you could have two.
Yeah, by him, and it's upsetting.
It's upsetting.
It's upsetting.
But yeah, Mariah Carey, that whole scene in the office at the, like, the last final scene is, like, so intense.
So intense. I mean, just the fact that, like, her mom knew, her grandma knew, and no one does anything.
Yeah. Yeah.
And basically the entire reason Precious doesn't tell on her mom is because her mom's on welfare and she'll get cut off if she tells.
Yeah, and then, like, what's gonna happen to Precious?
Yeah, and it's like, exactly, what's gonna happen to Precious. Like, she lives with her mom.
Yeah, her mom is her caregiver.
So, like, and
she is 16 years old.
Her mom says that all the time about, like, well, if we get cut off of welfare, what are you going to do? Where are you going to go? She does say that in the movie, too. So it's, like, clearly a thing that Precious has been told her whole life, which is, like, well, we need welfare because without it, we're both going to starve.
Yeah, and especially when your mom tells you that your entire life, you're like, that's the truth.
Yeah, exactly. And her mom, they clearly are, like, in the welfare state, like, which is that idea that, like, you basically con the welfare system so that you don't have to work.
Yeah.
So, she's a single mom, sort of, technically, like, a single mom.
But she's not, like, she's not on disability or anything. She just doesn't want to work.
Yeah, she's just a single mom who has a daughter, who has kids, so it's really easy for her to be, like, conning the system. And, you know, she lies and says, oh, I go out and look for a job. There's a, when they have that visit from the welfare worker, she asks, like, oh, when was the last time you looked for a job? And she's like, oh, you know, last week I had some interviews, but they just said they're going to call me.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, they make it, it's kind of like an interesting look. I don't know if the welfare system is so much like this anymore. This is obviously like 11 years ago. 1987, And in the 80s, which is like kind of peak welfare time.
Yeah, yeah.
So, I don't know exactly, because nowadays it would be a lot easier to find out if someone had been applying for jobs, like, you could make them show proof.
Yeah.
But back then, they don't question her very much at all.
They, like, kind of just take her word for it.
It kind of almost seems like they know she's lying.
But they don't really care.
Yeah. So that's an interesting thing, too, which is, like, the idea that you can kind of lie about this and that there's no, like, way to prove it. Because if you are on welfare, you do have to prove that you're looking for work. Mm-hmm. Like, same as, like, when you're on unemployment, you do have to prove that you're actively looking for work. And if you, like, turn down job offers and stuff,
then you can get it taken away.
Then you can get it taken away. So you do have to, like, prove that you are working for work if you're not on, like, some kind of, like, disability or something like that. Mm-hmm. And You do get more money based on, like, how many kids, or I just guess on how many dependents you have.
Yeah, and so she's saying that she will have 3 dependents.
Right.
Once Abdul is born.
But in reality, she has 1.
Yeah, because Mongo is living with her grandmother.
Right. And the idea is probably Abdul would as well.
Yeah.
She really doesn't want Precious to go to school.
Yeah, she wants to, you know, just keep her under her thumb.
Yeah, essentially. And she wants Precious to apply for welfare.
So she can get more money.
Which is why Precious actually meets Miss Weiss in the first place.
Yeah, she was going to get welfare, and then Miss Weiss was like, you're going to have to tell me, like, what's going on, or yeah, I'm not going to give you welfare.
Yeah. That's basically what happens. Miss Weiss was like, well, I can't give you welfare if we don't talk about, like, your home life and stuff mm-hmm. like that. Especially because she's underage.
Yeah.
She's only 16. Which I was like, can you even get welfare at 16, even if you drop out? I feel like...
No. I feel like you can't.
I feel like you gotta be 18 at least.
But I don't know about 1987, though.
Exactly. So, yeah, it's a really interesting look at, like, kind of how people do abuse the welfare system.
Mm-hmm.
And how... I mean, that makes people look... You know what I mean? People that... It's hard because I feel like a lot of people think this is how everyone on welfare is.
Definitely not, though.
Definitely not.
I think most people who are on welfare genuinely need it.
Yeah. But then you have, like, there are people like this who do abuse the system.
Definitely. I've met a couple, yeah.
Oh, yeah. I think everyone has. It's like there are people who do abuse this system, and the system is not that hard to abuse, I guess.
Yeah.
I mean, you definitely have to do a little working around, but...
Mm-hmm.
Certainly, especially back then, it seems like it was incredibly easy to abuse. Just say you're looking for work.
Yeah.
I think now more people apply for jobs that they're not qualified for, that mm-hmm. they know they would never get an interview for, or they purposely do poor on the applications and stuff. Because I do think now you do have to actually show proof that you're actively looking for work, and that's a lot easier with, like, the internet.
For sure.
But, I think you do have to, you can, like, I think a lot of people just apply for jobs that they're not qualified for, that they know they would never get in, like, a million years.
Yeah.
So.
Also, like, you know, the social work system has just changed so much like, the 80s, and there's so many more, there's different protocols, mm-hmm. you know, for the most part, people are more, like, you know, together with it.
Oh, yeah. I mean, Miss Rain also knows about the abuse.
Yeah, from Precious's journal.
From Precious's journal, and doesn't say anything, which is, like, kind of messed up.
Because, okay, so we don't know when, like, mandated reporting became a thing.
Yeah.
So, like, mandating reporting means that if there is current abuse happening, you, as a mandated reporter, have to report it to, like, a sexual abuse hotline, right? So, like, if you're, like, a therapist, social worker, teacher, you're pretty much a mandated reporter.
Mm-hmm.
So, as a teacher, Miss Rain would be a mandated reporter, but I'm not sure when that law came into place.
1975.
Huh. What's up, Miss Rain?
Yeah. But in 1963, the early law mandated only physicians had to report physical abuse.
Oh, okay.
But in 1975, it was adapted. Maybe that was only in one state. I think it might be by state.
Oh.
I don't think it's a federal mandated reporter.
That's weird.
So she's in what, New York?
Yeah.
That was in Philadelphia in 1975. When did teachers become mandated reporters? New York.
Because technically, Miss Rain could not report about her father raping her because her father's no longer in the picture. It's not ongoing. But she could report Mary's abuse. Because it is ongoing.
I don't know if she talks about that.
That's true. Maybe she did just talk about her dad. Yeah. And you can't do that because he's gone.
Yeah.
Like, you can only report, you only have to report abuse if it's, like, happening right now.
It doesn't say.
Interesting. I'm not really sure about that.
74.
Not really sure.
Probably around that.
What's going on with Miss Rain, but if she didn't mention the abuse of, like, from Mary, then that would make sense why she wouldn't report it.
I think it's definitely possible that she just didn't know.
Yeah.
So, this movie is very upsetting.
Very upsetting. Pretty much everything upsetting.
Pretty much every scene is sad.
The acting is phenomenal.
Oh, so good.
On everyone's parts.
Everyone's.
Even the, like, the minor characters, the kids in the class are, like, excellent.
Yes. Well, you know, I think this is something that's interesting, too, is we've been covering a lot of movies about, like, these, I would like, quote-unquote, good black people, right?
Yeah.
Like, these people that were, like, changed history and did all this stuff. But what I think is interesting about this movie is that it's, like, a story that makes you feel sympathetic for, like, the lowest, like, poorest,
poverty-stricken
black person. Like,
yeah.
She is obviously overweight. Mm-hmm. She steals. She has had two children.
I mean, by rape.
By her father, which is messed up. Yeah. But you know what I mean? Like, if you're just looking on the outside, it's like, oh, a teen who's been pregnant twice. She's 16. She's a thief. She's overweight.
Delinquent is what most people would think.
Illiterate, she's very, like, quiet, but also, like, aggressive.
Yeah.
Like, all these things that...
Guarded. She's, like, I mean, yes. She's been abused her entire
exactly.
life.
Exactly. And so you kind of, like, look at her and people really, I don't know, it's like, this is a kind of person that nobody ever, like, roots for.
Yeah.
This is the kind of person that no one's ever, like, well, this is obviously not, like, the black community's best and brightest. Is my point.
Yeah.
This is not a movie about, like, the best and brightest to ever come out of the black community and why we should respect them because they're so good and, like, so perfect. It's like, yeah, this is about a girl who has been through a lot of shit in her life, who's not a perfect person, mm-hmm. who's trying her best to get out of a bad situation, but has, like, all the cards stacked against her.
Yeah. Literally everything is against her.
And, I mean, honestly, like, the scene where they're trying to get her to a halfway house... Miss Rain calls, like, 4 or 5 different places before she's able to find anything. And Miss Rain, like, works with underprivileged youth.
She knows
people. So she knows people. She knows who to call. And she still struggles to get Precious and her child in. And it's like, if Precious was having to do that herself...
Yeah, it would be almost impossible. She's, you know, almost illiterate.
Mm-hmm.
She, you know, doesn't really know anyone in the system.
No, of course
and
not.
And, you know, she doesn't... And listen, that language that they use in, like, that social work system and stuff is complicated and confusing.
Well, not only that, but it's like, even when she did tell Miss Weiss about the abuse, what happened? All they did is cut her off welfare.
Yeah.
Which is, like... her only leg she currently has to stand on financially.
Yeah, so and, like, pretty so much the only reason her mom's keeping her alive...
is for welfare.
Yeah.
So it's, like... so I understand that, like, the government obviously can't continue to give you welfare if you're abusing the system, and we can prove that.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it's, like, all you did is take away their money. You didn't help the situation at all.
Yeah, you didn't get her out of the situation.
All you did was make it worse.
Yes. Because having less money stresses people out, and stressing people out makes them more abusive.
Yeah, and also, like, again, if you know that basically a mom is specifically using her child and her grandchildren to abuse the welfare system, how do you think she's gonna feel when that welfare is cut off?
Mm-hmm.
It's, like, the only...
You think she's gonna take it out on the U.S. government? No, her children.
And not only that, but, like, where's Precious supposed to go? Like, you know she's pregnant, you know she lives with her mom, and if you know you're taking away her mom's money, where is she supposed to go?
Yeah.
Like, you didn't set her up with any resources to help her get to a women's shelter, you didn't set her up with any resources to help her get to a halfway house. The only reason she was able to find those, after breaking and entering, by the way,
mm-hmm.
is because her teacher cared enough...
to be like, we're gonna find you a place.
To help her, yeah, to help her find a place. And, like, the fact is, Precious got a lot of what the good things that happened in her life because of, like, educators who cared enough about her. Like, her principal is, like, kind of a bitch, but with her principal made the right call in sending her to that school.
Yeah, definitely.
Like, she knew that Precious needed to continue her education and that Precious wanted to continue her education, mm-hmm. but knew that she was not going to be able to do it public school system.
Yeah.
So her sending her to that alternative school, like...
smaller class size, you know, a teacher who's equipped to deal with underprivileged teens.
Exactly. It's like, her sending her to that school is, like, one of the best things that ever happened to Precious. And it would have been so easy to just be like, eh.
She can drop out.
Yeah, or she can stay and I don't care. You know what I mean? Like, most principals would not care. And the fact is that, like, Precious was kind of a special student because she had good grades, and that's why she helped her. It's like, well, what about students that don't have good grades? Because the fact that Precious did have good grades is, like, an anomaly.
Yes, exactly.
Because Precious cares enough about school that she tries hard.
And that's, like, her escape.
Exactly. Yeah. But for a lot of kids, especially, like, I think you could see how in that situation, especially a situation where you're being taught... You're never going to need school. Why do you even care? It's not going to help you. You're stupid. Like,
and when your parent just calls you stupid all the time, you start to believe it.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, yeah. And there are several scenes where it's really sad. Like, Precious looks in the mirror and she sees herself as, like, a white woman.
Yeah.
And, like, thinks about what it would be like if she was, like thin and white. A beautiful white
woman. Yeah.
It's really sad.
Really sad. Ugh.
And, you know, she's, like, and Precious also, like, has crushes on literally, like, anybody that's nice to her.
Mm-hmm.
Like, any man that shows her any kind of compassion.
It's a symptom of abuse.
Yeah, she's, like, immediately in love with, even if it's, like...
Like, she loved her teacher, her math teacher, who was nice to her because she was good at math.
She's, like, in love with the nurse who was nice to her when she had Abdul. Like, she, like, very much has... crushes on the people who, like, literally she has no business having crushes on.
But they're just nice to her.
Because they're just nice to her. And it's really, I mean, it's just one of those things that, like, this is a story that I think it's interesting because it just shows you, like, black people don't have to be the best and brightest of their community to be, like, respected and for you to listen to
and for them to deserve resources.
Exactly. It's like, she deserves
to have an education.
To have an education.
And she deserves to get out of that home.
And not only that, but, like, the education is basically what gives her the resource to eventually get out of the situation.
Yeah.
And if people hadn't stepped up and, like, helped her,
mm-hmm.
she would still be in that situation. And also, at the end of the day, she has AIDS anyway. It doesn't even matter. Like, yeah. She has AIDS, and she's gonna die from AIDS.
She's 16, and she has AIDS.
Because this is 1987, and it's an AIDS epidemic, and nobody cares about you if you have AIDS.
It's true.
So... she's going to die from AIDS.
Yeah.
And, like, that's just something that is, like, so far out there that we don't even, like, address it.
Hardly. Yeah, exactly.
Like, because it's just, like, to her, it's just, like, well, there's another issue. This is the issue that will eventually kill me.
Yeah. I just, it's so sad.
It is
sad. And, like, it's probably, Precious probably just thought she was gonna die every day.
Oh, yeah.
You know? Like, that's just growing up in that environment.
Yeah. I mean, the thing is, like, you meet people in your life that are, like, Precious, but you don't get to see all the behind-the-scenes stuff that we see in Precious.
Mm-hmm.
You meet people all the time who are, like, delinquent, illiterate,
mm-hmm.
like, not educated people who, like, you know, don't care, don't seem like they care, just mm-hmm. seem like they're very aggressive. You meet people like that, but you don't meet... you don't get to go see that in their home that their parents are uneducated, abusive, like, just basically had their children to be servants.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you don't get to see that. You don't get to see that, like, oh, they've got kids that they're, like, missing or trying to take care of. You don't get to see that their parents don't want them to get an education. You don't get to see all this stuff. You see that they steal fried chicken, but you don't see why.
Exactly.
Like...
have some compassion.
That's the thing, is, like, this movie, I think what's so good about it is it's, like... and also, it's good and bad, I guess, in a way, which is, like, you see... it's really easy to empathize with Precious because we see what's going on.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it's, like, if you just saw Precious and all you saw was, like, her public appearance, would you have the same compassion? Probably not. Mm-hmm. You'd be like, well, this is a bad teen who, like, deserves to be locked up, doesn't deserve her kids, abusing the welfare state. And you're like, well, yeah, all of that is, like, true.
But, like, if you look a little bit more
you'll see, like, the whys.
Yeah, and that makes it so much more understandable. Mm-hmm.
And the fact is that, like, I think one of the most interesting parts of the movie is when they get cut off welfare. Like, mm-hmm. to me, that is speaks one of the highest volumes about why these people are so scared to speak out.
Mm-hmm.
Because, again, like, when they get cut on welfare, what does that do? All it does is hurt Precious. It doesn't help Precious
at all. You didn't send a psychologist. You didn't send a social worker. Like, you didn't get her a place in a women's shelter. You didn't do anything to help except take away her one crutch.
Yeah. It's literally, like, for a lot of these people, it's like, well, welfare is the only way that I live. So how am I supposed to, like,
get resources?
How am I supposed to come out and be like, hey, my mom's abusive and she's also not looking for a job? And it's like, okay, well, there goes your money to live on, kid.
But what about it's like they just heard she's abusing the welfare system and not she's also abusing me.
Exactly. It's like, well, there goes your money, kid. Also, it's like, well, if they have kids, what are we supposed to do? Like, you're just gonna say, like, okay, the kids can starve?
Yeah, they can die.
I don't care. Like, they did nothing in the way of actually, like, yeah, Mary does not deserve welfare at all. Mary doesn't deserve to have the money that she has mm-hmm. because she's abusing the system. But at the same time, without that money, Precious has nowhere to go. She's homeless. She has no food.
Mm-hmm.
And it's only the welfare. Like, welfare is as important to Precious as it is to Mary.
Yeah.
And yeah, Precious doesn't want... It's not Precious's welfare, but it is the welfare keeping Precious afloat.
Mm-hmm.
So the fact that they just, like, take it away and don't do anything else to help her is, like, so indicative of why people are so scared to lose the welfare.
Yeah.
Because it's like they don't want to come out and say, like, oh, this person that's on welfare is doing this, because then what? It's not like they don't provide them any extra resources. They don't provide them with, like, a job. They don't provide them with a place to stay, a homeless shelter or a halfway house or anything like that.
So what are they supposed to do?
Exactly. No, I mean, yeah, exactly. It's like, I mean, the ideal, right, is that they never abuse the welfare system in the first place, so you never even need it.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, the reality is that if you're offering something like welfare, people are always going to try and abuse that because...
But is it, duh. Is it worth it to, like, cut off those people and then...
Knowing that it's going to trickle down and hurt others.
Yeah.
Who are...
Innocent. Innocent. In this. Yeah. Yeah.
Exactly. It's like Precious didn't do anything. Precious does work. Precious does...
She, like, goes to school.
She goes to school. She
works hard in school.
She does what she's supposed to do. She is trying to get better. But it's like cutting off welfare for her, if she had not had her school, would basically have been like the end of Precious' education. It would have been the end. It would literally, not having welfare would have, like, spelled the end for Precious had she not had her alternative school.
Definitely.
I mean, she would have had nowhere to go.
She had no support system.
Because now she has a baby and a mom and another baby that she's going to need to have money to support. And you know her mom's not going to go work.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, well, guess what, Precious? You're dropping out of school and you're going to work. That's exactly what would happen. And then it's like Precious wouldn't have graduated with her GED. She wouldn't have learned to read at a high school level.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? So...
And, you know, at the end of the movie, she, like, you know, talks about how she wants to go to college and she wants to, you know, continue her education and, you know.
Exactly. And she's only able to do that because she has a place to sleep at night, because she doesn't have to worry about food, because she knows that her babies are going to be able to be okay during the day.
It's like Maslow's hierarchy of needs. Like, you have to have your basic needs taken care of before you can move on to, like, bettering yourself mm-hmm. or getting an education. You have to have those basic needs of exactly. shelter, food, and water. And a support system before you exactly. can actually do these things.
Exactly. And I mean, we can even just see, like, Precious is obviously, like, a fighter. Because she, even when she, I mean, she has her, like, shelter, food, those needs are met. But, you know, she's coming home to a not stable environment.
Her mom's throwing beer bottles at her head.
Yeah, she's coming home to a place where she's not safe. She's coming home to a place where sometimes there isn't food. Where she doesn't have someone that loves or supports her. And... where she is, like, in danger a lot of the time. And
she could die.
Exactly. And it's like, that is what... She already should not be doing as well as she is, almost. Mm-hmm. Like, the fact that she's good at anything...
She is so resilient.
Yeah, really, like, says that she tries very, very hard.
Mm-hmm.
And it really says, like, that things should go well for her. But again, like, her saving grace is that alternative school. Because without that alternative school, she's not getting better.
Yeah.
And the fact is that, like, you can't send every kid who's not advantaged to an alternative school.
Yeah, definitely.
The fact is, they sent Precious because they knew she wanted to do well.
Yeah, what because she already made good grades.
And again, like, she didn't even have to go. Like, she very easily could have dropped out.
Mm-hmm.
And the school would have done nothing. And Precious, and they wanted her to continue. But, like, you got to think about those kids that are in similar situations to Precious's who don't care.
Mm-hmm.
Who don't want to try. And it's like, how can you blame them? Like, you can't... Again, like, Precious is an exception, not the rule.
Definitely.
Like, she is in a very good place considering how shit her life is.
Definitely, yeah.
And, like, I can't imagine how many people would... be doing as well as Precious is if they were in that situation.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, there are people with completely 100% awesome support systems who have a child on accident, not through rape.
Yeah.
And they still can't handle it.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like, that's enough to make
them... And she's handling, like, a kid. She's doing well in school.
Yeah.
And she's, you know, making friends and trying to not, you know, get murdered by her mother.
Yeah.
And then she goes and connects with Miss Weiss.
Yeah,
and
not only that, but she's cooking, cleaning, mm-hmm. running a household. Like, she's doing, plus her homework, plus getting herself to school every day, plus, you know, probably getting her own clothes, buying her mom's stuff for her, going mm-hmm. grocery shopping, doing all the stuff that a parent should be doing.
But she's 16 years old and pregnant by her father.
For the second time.
For the second time. Most people would not be
doing this. And learning to read and write. She can't read, she can't write, learning to do that. She, like, yeah, has been abused since she was, like, 3 years old. And the thing is like, this isn't... I mean, yeah, this isn't, like, a normal situation, but it's not all that...
All of this could happen, and it often does happen.
Yeah, could very realistically happen exactly what's happening
here. Yes.
I mean, sometimes, like, you don't... Kids, even if they're not, like, get pregnant by their father or anything, like, yeah, family members abuse children
all the time.
A lot. I think... I've always found this interesting. The amount... People are so trusting of, like... People not being predators.
Yes.
I mean, and it makes sense because, like, to us, like, a person that isn't, doesn't see children in the, is, like, sexually exploitable, I guess. Yeah. To us, it's like, well, it's just so far out of the realm of what we consider possible for ourselves that it's hard to imagine that another person could do it. So we automatically want to be like...
That doesn't happen that much.
It doesn't happen that much. It's really, really outside the typical. I'm sure they're not doing it. You know what I mean? But then, like, go ahead and just, like, look up the amount of registered sex offenders in your neighborhood. Yeah. Just go ahead and look it up.
Just do it.
And it's true that sex offending, when you look up those maps, they don't tell you the sexual offense all the time.
Oklahoma does.
Ooh. Mm-hmm. Ours just shows... like, the level of, so it's either, like, top level or a lower level.
Yeah.
So, a lower level might be, like...
You were peeing in public.
Yeah, or that you flashed, you, like, mooned someone on the highway.
You were having sex in a car with someone.
Yeah, that all can get you registered as a sex offender, but it's lower level sexual offense. It's, like, a misdemeanor.
Yeah.
But then, like, being a rapist, being, like, an adult that has sex with a minor, mm-hmm. or that has sexual relations with a minor, child pornography... All these other things get you registered as, like, a
like,
top...
Like, level one.
Like, a level one sexual abuser. And there are different age limits. For example, like, I believe only if it's under a certain age, you have to, like, do that thing where you introduce yourself to your neighbors and you're like, hi, I am a sexual abuser, can't live within so many feet of a school. That's not, like... I believe that is only if it's under a certain age. Probably literally, like, 16, I would assume, is that age.
Mm-hmm.
Because... You can get registered as a sexual offender if you're 22 dating a 17-year-old, which is still incredibly creepy.
Yeah, we would never do that.
Does make you a sexual offender, but it's also clearly not the same as being, like, 40 and abusing, like, a 6-year-old.
Yeah, definitely
clearly
not the same.
Not the same, but still horrible, and you are going to be registered as a sex offender. Yes. Talk to your sex offender. But... You look up those maps, and it's, like, kind of insane.
Listen, and as someone who has done, like, a lot of internships with, like, mental health centers and stuff like that, the number of people I have encountered who have, like, almost everyone I have seen has been sexually abused by someone, and most of the time it's a family member.
Yeah, it's, like, way, way more than you think.
Way more than you would think.
Like, you think, like, oh, that's so out of the realm for so many people. No, it's not.
No, it's not. It happens all the time to a lot of people.
A lot of people. And a lot of times, poor people.
And, you know, the numbers of, like, convicted sexual offenders is low.
Yeah.
Like, there are so many more sexual offenders that we don't know about.
Yeah, that's the other thing, too, is, like, reportings on sexual crimes are really low. Mm-hmm. So you have to imagine, this map that I'm seeing is how many people were convicted to a point that they had to register.
Yeah.
And it's still an alarming amount.
Mm-hmm.
Now imagine that this is a highly underreported statistic, and then just go ahead and imagine what that map would actually look like if the world could see inside everyone's mind.
It'd be insane.
You would be shocked. People do it for all different reasons,
mm-hmm.
but... The fact is that it happens way more than you think.
Yeah. Way more.
Way more than you think. And it's really just, it's a disturbing thing that, like, people need to come to terms with, but, like, it's not something you want to think about. You want to think, like, oh, that's so far out of the realm of possible or normal that, like, it's like, you don't assume everyone you meet is a serial killer.
Mm-hmm.
Because serial killers are really rare, right? Like, yeah. That's not a super common thing that people are serial killers, because they're so, like, untypical. They're so not normal.
Yeah, definitely.
That you're like, well, that couldn't happen. And you think the same thing about, like,
rapists,
pedophiles, sexual abusers,
molesters. But they are so much more common than you think.
So common. And it's, again, I don't know what that map, that includes everyone that's ever had to register as a sexual offender, mm-hmm. including, like, rape, sexual assault, child pornography, anything.
Mm-hmm.
And that could be, again, like, a 22-year-old having sex with a 20, or 17-year-old, and it could be a 40-year-old that molested a 6-year-old. It could be any number of those things, and I don't know what they are.
Mm-hmm.
But the fact is that, like, it happens enough that you should be suspicious.
You should, listen.
And that you should go ahead and just put it in your mind that it's a possibility for anyone that you meet.
Yes, okay, so whenever I was, like, 13, I had this mentor,
mm-hmm.
and he was a really nice guy. I loved him. I just thought he was wonderful. And then it came out that he, you know, had a ton of child porn on his computer, and that he, yeah. you know, tried to have sex with a 13-year-old, and he was in his 30s. And, you know, people get really good at keeping their secrets, and pedophiles don't just groom children, they groom everyone around them.
Oh, yeah, exactly. Because, I mean, duh.
Yeah, you have to, like, trick people into thinking you're okay.
A pedophile isn't always a creepy guy with a mustache who has a van.
Sometimes it's your uncle.
Sometimes it's your next-door neighbor who seems like the nicest guy in the world. Like, you don't know. You don't know people. You never know someone as well as you think you know them.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I believe that is on, they say that on Crime Junkie.
Yeah.
They always say that, which is a, like, Crime Junkie life rule, that you never know someone as well as you think you know. You could always be wrong about someone.
Yes.
Because people that are sick and twisted
lie.
They know they're sick and twisted. You think that a pedophile isn't aware that it's bad to be a pedophile?
Of course they are.
They are aware. Like, they know that it's bad. Now, whether or not they can stop themselves is, like, a whole different whatever.
Some can.
Whether or not...
Most can't.
Yeah. It's like, whether or not they want to be a pedophile is a completely different story. They...
Pedophilia is like, genetic and biological. In some form. Like, we've decided that, like, science has decided that.
Yeah, so it's, like...
It's not their fault that they have those things, but always acting on it is always your fault.
Yes, and it's, like, they're still aware that it's bad.
Yeah.
What murderers know that murder is bad.
Mm-hmm.
Does it mean they're not going to do it? Not necessarily, but they know it's bad. But it's like, you just cannot trust people.
It's true.
You...
Be suspicious.
And, I mean, yeah, like, hopefully in your life, you'll never have to encounter anyone that, like, wants to abuse you or stuff, but I guarantee you have encountered people in your life who have been abused.
Guarantee
you have encountered multiple people in your life who have been abused by someone. I mean, and also I think it's really interesting the kind of, I mean, like, would Precious would, I think, play to audiences differently if she hadn't been abused from the time she was a little kid.
I agree.
Because I find people consider, I mean, obviously, I do a bit. I just said it. Like, 17 and 23 is a lot different to me than 40 and 6.
Yeah.
That's a lot different to me. Do I still think they're right? No, I think both of them are completely wrong.
Yeah.
But do I understand that there is a difference? Yes. But I think, like, I mean, I know that when I went to school, there was a girl who I went to school with who was, like, 14. And there was this teacher. He was, I don't know, maybe 24 or something like that, 23, mm-hmm. 24. Very young. Like, fresh out of college kind of teacher. And they had a relationship. Like, they never had sex from what I remember, like, mm-hmm. if I'm remembering that correctly or if I heard correctly. But I know that they kissed, they exchanged romantic texts and letters and photos and all this kind of stuff.
14 and 24.
14 and 24. Ugh. 24 is me being generous, also. Ugh. I can't really remember how old he was. But I remember when that happened. Because the teacher, like, I loved that teacher. I had him.
Yeah.
He would, the first year he was ever there, I was in his class. Mm-hmm. And then this was a girl a year younger than me that this happened to. Mm-hmm. So his second year. And, like, I remember I loved that teacher. Lots of girls had a crush on him. He was mm-hmm. super cool. He was fun. He was a good teacher. And, like, everyone loved him. And I remember that when it came out, because basically what had happened is he was one of the Scholar Bowl teachers, and yeah. the girl was on the Scholar Bowl team as well. And basically, like, one night there was a tournament at our school, and these kids were sticking around because they were help cleaning up, mm-hmm. and they went by his door to see if he needed anything else. Mm-hmm. And when they popped in, like, they were kissing.
Oh, no.
And they saw it, and they left and went and told the other teacher.
Yeah.
And obviously that teacher then told mm-hmm. on him, got him fired. But he did go to court. He was convicted. But he didn't go to jail. He didn't serve any jail time. Mm-hmm. I don't know if his teaching license was revoked or not.
Oh, I'm sure it was.
Hopefully, right? But I know that, like, he had a wife. They stayed together. Mm-hmm. He had children. Has children currently. They were not, like, taken away from him at all. Like, I saw him at the mall, like, a couple years after that. I remember the girl telling me that, like, even after he had been fired, that he still contacted her and stuff like that. And the thing is I remember that at my school, like, a lot of people blamed her.
Yeah.
And we're like, and I mean, she's a very, like, gorgeous girl, like, mm-hmm. in my opinion. She's very pretty. She's always been very pretty. Like, but at the same time, like, I remember at the time, too, people were always like, well, she must have led him on in some way and, like, all this stuff. And I remember, like, thinking, like, back in the day, whatever, this is a gross thought, but the thought that was like, yeah, she must have, like, you know.
Asked for it, yeah.
Not only that, but she, or, like, the idea that she consented.
Yeah.
Like, she was okay with it. She was in the relationship with him. And, like, at the time, I was like, well, yeah, she did consent. She did want it. And she even said it, like, she was a participating party. But I look back now, and I'm like, 14 is not a consensual age. At 14, you're so easily manipulated.
You cannot, a child cannot consent to an adult. And here's ever. The thing,
and people say, like, well, that's only, like, a legal consent. And it's like, but not really. Because, you know, when I was 14, I dated an 18-year-old. And I really thought that was okay. Like, I mm-hmm. really thought.
Me too.
I really thought, yeah, oh, I'm definitely.
He loves me. I'm mature.
I'm mature. We're, you know what I mean? But I look back now, and I'm like, easily manipulated was I, too? Like, I look back at some of the things that, I think back to some of the things he said to me. I was so naive, and yeah. I believed him so much. And I remember, actually, like, the way we broke up, the reason we broke up, is because I had a friend who was in my age, and she had a sister who was his age. Mm-hmm. So she was 18, her sister. And she was my age, so we had, like, I was dating someone that was her age. And basically, she messaged me because she knew who I was because mm-hmm. I was friends with her sister. And I'd known her since I was, like, a little kid. And she basically messaged me and said, hey, your boyfriend is, like, cheating on you. Like, he's sleeping with another girl.
Oh.
And I basically found out that he had been sleeping with another girl that was, like, his own age the whole mm-hmm. time because I wouldn't sleep with him. Because yeah. I had said no, like, so many times, and when I, like, confronted him about it, he was like, well, you know, like, I just have needs and all this stuff. I know.
Shut up. How,
like, I roll. But, like, that just really tells you, like, what was an 18-year-old using me for? Because he thought I would be more easily manipulated into sex mm-hmm. than an 18-year-old would. And he was right. Like, I mean, honestly.
Definitely.
If he had kept working on me, I guarantee we would have had sex. But because another girl stepped in, his own age, and was like, don't. Literally yeah. don't. I did. And I look back now, and I'm like, how freaking stupid was I? When I was 18, I remember looking back and thinking,
I would never date a 14-year-old.
That's disgusting to me. The idea of dating a 14-year-old. That would be like dating someone the age of my younger brother. Listen,
I wouldn't date an 18-year-old now.
No,
I'm 23. Either. Disgusting.
Disgusting. It's like, it's a child. But, you know, like, how common is that? How many of us know people that were in high school dating, like, middle schoolers? How many of us? I know so many.
I know so and many. I was one.
Yeah. Ugh. I mean, it's gross. And it's like, at the time, especially when you're younger, it's really easy to be like, oh, well, they consented because they wanted to be in the relationship. And you're like, they didn't consent because they don't know any better.
Yeah.
Yeah, they want to be in the relationship. I also want to eat candy every day of my life. But guess what? Like, that's a bad idea. Like, just because a kid wants to do something does not mean that they should do it.
It's your responsibility as an adult to say, that's inappropriate. Mm-hmm. You can't have a crush on me because you're too young.
Exactly. And, like, you know, when I was in college, which is very recently.
We graduated in May.
Back when, like, my freshman and through last summer, before my senior year, I was a resident assistant for a program which basically worked with underprivileged youth.
Mm-hmm.
And basically it was, a program to encourage them to go to college.
College readiness,
yeah. Yeah, a college readiness program for underprivileged youth. And there were some of those kids who, like, definitely, I mean, I was with them for 3 years. So, like, I was basically with them their entire time in the program, some of them. And there definitely were some who had romantic feelings for me, other RAs. Like, I definitely saw it. I saw it with the females with the male RAs. I saw it with the males with, like, the other female RAs, and myself included. And there were some times where I had to sit down with those kids and say, listen, you're a nice kid, and I appreciate that you look up to me and stuff like that, but this is not going to happen. Mm-hmm. Like, I would never, ever do this. You need to tone it down. Mm-hmm. You need to not touch me, because at the end of the day, you're a kid, and I will never, ever see you as a potential romantic interest.
Yeah.
Even if you graduated from this program, I'm never going to see you as a potential romantic interest. Mm-hmm. And
because that dynamic is established.
That dynamic is established. It will never, and to me, that's not, it's a non-option. It's a non-option. So you need to tone it down. And there, I know some male RAs had to have some talks with some girls that also, and also say, like, look, you're nice. I care about you in the way that, like, I care about you as a, like, program, like, mentor.
I'm a mentor.
Exactly, but this is not going to happen. And you need to chillax with the signals, because it's not going to happen. And then I also saw, at the same program, I saw some RAs who very much lavished in that attention and who encouraged the attention. And it was really disturbing. And I even brought it up to my supervisors at some point, and one of the RAs did get in trouble for it, because that is a real problem. You are an adult. You're an adult that they look to. A lot of these kids don't have strong adult figures in their life.
Mm-hmm.
You're an adult figure that they look up to. And it's hard, too, because it's like there's not that much of an age gap.
They have a ton of hormones.
Yeah, and the thing is, like, there's not that much of an age gap.
Yeah.
Like, some of
these kids,
the power
dynamic is so large.
When I started, the oldest kids were only, some of them, a couple months younger than me.
Yeah.
Like, 6 months younger than me. And it's like, would it have been creepy if I had gone out with them? Like, if I had met them outside of there? No.
Mm-hmm.
They're only 6 months younger than me. But in the context, yes. It's very creepy. I am in charge of them.
Yeah.
Like, and to use that position of power to your advantage is disturbing.
Very upsetting.
And I think that it happens a lot more often than you think.
Definitely.
I think people don't always think about it like that. Like, sometimes when they're being predatory, they don't think of it as predatory. They think of the other party as wanting it just as much as they do.
As consenting.
But you have to understand, and this is maybe a rhetoric that needs to be pushed a little more, which is that there are certain dynamics, whether it's power, age, whatever, that make it impossible to 100% consent.
Yes.
And sometimes, obviously, this works out, and people do stay together, and it is truly, like, they really do like each other.
Mm-hmm.
But if that is the case, if you do truly have a connection with someone, you know, and they're only a year younger than you, whatever, you need to remove whatever position of power you hold.
Yes.
Or they need to not be under your power.
Definitely.
Like, if you're a principal and someone is your teacher, and you're in charge of their job, you should not be dating them.
No.
Even if you're both consenting adults one of you needs to step out from that position so that you can have that relationship.
Yes.
Because without that, there is always going to be a fear that the other person could do something bad.
That if you do not consent.
Exactly. So
the implication that something bad might happen to you if you do not consent
is there. And you are a lot more easily manipulated when you're in those types of situations. Mm-hmm. Coercion is a lot more likely to happen. Like, all of those things, it happens a lot more than you think. I mean, it happens a lot. I'm not even going to say happens a lot more than you think. It happens a lot, period. Mm-hmm. Period. Full stop. It happens a lot.
Yes.
And I think this movie, again, makes Precious look very, very sympathetic. But I have to wonder, like, if this had started happening when she was 14...
Would people still view her as, like, 100% the victim?
I don't think they would.
And they made it to where she was being abused by the time she was 3, which obviously, like, she has absolutely no control over. And yeah. I would agree she has absolutely no control over it when she's 14.
I agree, too. But you're an abusive father.
I know. But some people would think that, like, oh, she was somehow more responsible for it because of her age.
I mean, I think that's a very real, like, rhetoric, and especially I think when it's someone, again, like pedophiles, abusers, they groom not just their victims, mm-hmm. but everyone. They want you to like them because you're more likely to stand up for them
or like trust them with your kids.
Exactly. Or when shit hits the fan,
yeah,
you're more likely to believe in them.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact is, like, liars and con men and abusers, they take advantage of people's trusting nature.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's literally the idea of a con man only exists because people are trusting.
Yeah. People want to trust others.
People want to trust others. And so people are able to lie. And I think, like, we need to definitely push more that, like, when you are lying and when you're coercing and when you're using your power or when you are, like, when someone's young, they're more easily manipulated. Like, it's just something that you have to be aware of.
Yeah.
And it's something that you, I mean, obviously it's hard. It's a case-by-case basis a lot of times, like, especially when it gets into those more gray areas.
Mm-hmm.
You have to take it case-by-case because, again, like, a 22-year-old and a 17-year-old that started dating when they were in high school and end up getting married, that's obviously not the same thing as an 18-year-old sleeping with a 13-year-old in middle school.
Mm-hmm.
Clearly different things. Or a 17-year-old sleeping with a 13-year-old middle school, either. Yeah. A senior in high school seeing a freshman in high school is way more manipulative than a 17-year-old and a 22-year-old.
Definitely.
And it's like, one of those is legal and one of them is not, but which one is wrong?
True.
And it's like, the legality doesn't always dictate the morality of the situation.
Definitely. That's like the first thing we learn in, like, deviant behavior.
Yeah, the, like, legality doesn't equal morality. So I think that, I don't know. I do think Precious would be a very different movie if she had been older.
I agree. I think people's perceptions would have been very different.
I think they definitely try and make her as sympathetic as possible.
Mm-hmm.
The only thing they don't do is make her skinny, which
a lot of people have a problem with.
A lot of people have a problem
with is, which I don't, let's, what? Doesn't make any sense. Do you want a couple of facts? I have a few. Monique accepted her role to raise awareness of sexual abuse. A confessed victim of incest herself, the actress had reservations about playing the part, but ultimately found the experience therapeutic. Mm. This was shot in only 5 weeks.
Wow.
Yeah. It was the first film to win the Grand Jury Prize at Sundance to be nominated for the Best Picture Oscar.
Whoa.
Isn't that wild? Let's see. Over 400 girls auditioned from across the country for the part of Precious. Gabourey Sidibe was cast a mere 6 weeks before the start of shooting.
Wow.
Wild.
She was excellent.
Wow. Helen Mirren was originally cast as Miss Weiss.
I'm glad that that is not what happened.
I'm also very glad that that happened. Mariah Carey was chosen as a replacement only 2 days before the film went into production.
Whoa, Mariah Carey, baby girl.
She's excellent in this.
She is really excellent in this. You forget she's Mariah Carey.
I could not believe it. I was like, are we sure that's Mariah Carey?
And I kept being like, I know I've seen her, but she doesn't seem like Mariah Carey.
According to Lee Daniels, Heath Ledger stopped by the set one day to hang out. The film was completed on January 23rd, 2008, the day after Ledger's death. Isn't that sad? I don't know why he came by to hang out, but I guess, you know.
Must have known someone.
Yeah.
Well?
Okay, so I asked Allison, so how were the reviews for this movie? And she said, probably the worst we've ever seen.
Yeah, so I want to say, like, a good long part of them, a good many of them were mad that she was fat.
What is it? It doesn't matter.
It doesn't
matter. Also, it makes sense because her mom, like, literally makes her eat when she's not hungry.
They literally were like, how can I be sympathetic to a fat woman, basically?
What?
Yeah, people were fucking disgusting.
I hate people.
I can't remember. No, this is the one that made me audibly gasp. I almost didn't read this review because I think it's really bad.
Oh, no.
I literally was like, I don't know if I want to read this out loud.
But you audibly gasped at this one?
I audibly gasped.
Maybe I can.
You probably will audibly gasp as well.
Maybe I can guess which part you audibly gasped at.
What do you give this movie before we start this?
Oh, 10 out of 10.
Me too.
Great movie.
So good.
So good.
Okay. 1 out of 10. How dare you?
Oh, no.
I wish I could set up a picket line for this movie. You should have left it in the book. For the first time in USA history, we have a black woman in the White House that's not mopping the floor, cooking the food, washing the linens, kissing the white man's butt, and this is how you celebrate it? How could you? You put on a movie with a 400-pound girl with a crackhead alcoholic mother, an incest-ridden daddy, two incest-ridden children, one of which is a spastic, while the girl wants to be white. In what way is this inspirational to any young black girl? Why not use the black women who didn't come up like this? Why not make a movie about the black female astronauts, the head of companies, teachers who care? How could you make this movie? There is nothing precious about it. How dare you? If this train wreck goes worldwide, they will think every black family is like this, that every black woman is like this, and that every black child is like this. How could you? Shame on you.
What?
Yeah. Which, like, I think we already talked about this a lot, which is that it's important to share stories about non-super successful black people.
Yeah.
Like, it's important to show, just like,
their merits do not give them more value.
Exactly.
Like, they are valuable as a person just by being a person.
And also, like, I'm sorry. Have white people not had movies about shitty people? Have white movies not have shit ton of movie about, like, people that come up in the worst fucking situations who try their hardest and, like, maybe they succeed, maybe they don't? Like, isn't, how many movies about white people have been made like that? Are people like, stop portraying white people as this? It's like, no, this isn't a portrayal of an entire race. It's a portrayal of a good section of the population and the real kinds of struggles that they actually deal with.
Yeah.
This is a very real reality for people.
Poverty is real, and this is what it looks like in some cases.
Exactly, and it's like, this is a real depiction of what poverty is like. This is not saying that everyone is like this, or that everyone should be like this. And like, making a movie about a person that has realistic life struggles just because they're a black person does not make the movie less good. And the idea that we should only be making movies about black people, which talk about, like, black people's best and brightest, people that are the most successful, people that are the most perfect, like, black people ever. The fact is that, like, black people are human. There are black people who are not good people. There are black people who have realistic human struggles. And if you are only showing the public, like, here's Michelle Obama, here's Martin Luther King, here's Malcolm X, here's Hidden Figures, here's when you're only showing that, these, like, perfect, like, in some cases, like, whitewashed,
like,
versions.
Idealized
persons of, like, how black people should act in the face of, like, adversity.
Yeah.
It's, like, so discrediting for when black people are, like, human
and struggling
and don't act perfect. Or when they are struggling, or when they aren't doing well, or when they come from a bad situation. And it's like, the reality is that more black people are in poverty than, like, disproportionately are in poverty.
Listen.
Compared to their, like, percentage of the population.
White people got a 400-year head start.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. If not more.
If not more.
Literally. So, like, you have to consider, like, disproportionately, black people are per capita, like, for their population, live in poverty way more than white people.
Yeah.
Like, I think there are more white people in poverty, but there's also just a lot more
white people. There's just a lot more white people, the statistics.
So you can't look at, like, those numbers. You have to look at, like, the percentage of people based on the percentage of their race. And there are a lot more black people per capita in poverty. So you have to consider that this is, like, a very real story that is going to resonate with a lot of black people. And to just, like, only be showing, well, here's, like, these really privileged or really, like, amazing black people. And it's like, yeah, there are people, like, Obama was poor when he grew up.
Yeah.
And he grew up to be the freaking president. Like, yeah, there are definitely people like Obama, and it's important to tell their stories, but it's also important to show realistic stories to not only, like, to black people so they can see, like, their struggles being portrayed, their modern-day struggles being portrayed on the screen, and that they can relate to that, but also it's important for white people to see, because white people need to realize that, like, this has just, this person who comes from this shit situation, who's a thief, who's a delinquent, whatever, that person is just as important as Hidden Figures NASA woman.
They have value as humans just for being a human.
Exactly. And it's like, they don't have to, I mean, like, how, I'm sorry, but how many movies about shitty white people have you seen? I literally don't even want to hear it. How many fucking movies have we seen about shitty white people who suck, who come from shit situations, who do shit things, but we all feel bad for them because, like, they have a shit life, right? Like, I'm trying to think, there's this movie with, like, Ryan Gosling, and he's like a
Drive.
Yes, something like that.
Yeah.
And he's, like, poor, right? And he ends up, like, I don't remember, but, like, gets into some trouble. And then, like, he's poor, and he, like, gets a woman pregnant, and he does all these bad things.
Oh, Place Beyond the Pines, I think is what you're talking
about. Maybe. Yes.
I don't know.
Yes, I think I think that is what I'm talking about, Place Beyond the Pines. And he gets in, like, all this trouble, and it, like, costs him a lot. And it's, like, yeah, we still feel sympathetic for that character, even though it's, like, a lot of what happens to him happens by his own fault.
Which does not happen at all in Precious's case. Everything pretty much happens to her.
Yeah, and not only that, but it's like, we feel bad for him because we realize, like, the situation that he came up in.
Yeah.
And that is literally such, it happens all the time. Like, I literally don't know what you want. Like, there have, like, been so many movies about white people who have had it hard and who struggle, like, realistic poverty struggles. And we feel bad for them. I mean, like, look at A Streetcar Named Desire. Literally from, like, the 1940s, about, like, a poor woman who is just, like, losing her mind because she can't cope with the fact that, like, she's not pretty and that she's losing her family house. What a stupid fucking thing to lose your mind over. But it's still, like, one of the most revered plays ever. It's, like, a super amazing movie. It's, like, one of the South's, like, number one pieces of art. And it's, like, but this is, like, too much to show a realistic depiction of what it's like to be in poverty. And, like, not only that, but Precious, what happens? She just does good.
Yeah, she literally, she's smart. She works hard. She is literally doing everything to keep herself alive.
She does, like, nothing wrong.
No.
Except, like, she steals a bucket of fried chicken.
Because she's hungry. Because there's no food in her house. Because her mom doesn't buy food.
And then again, like, the amount of people that are like, she's so fat. She's so fat. And I'm like, yeah, that's a point in the movie. That's quite aware.
She knows she's fat.
She knows she's fat.
And she talks about why she's fat.
And she hates it. Like, I don't know if you need to, like, be like, literally one of the reviews, this was so disgusting. Literally one of the reviews said that, like, they couldn't even hardly watch this movie because she disgusted them so much because she was fat. And I was like,
like, it made them nauseous.
What is wrong with you? Like, this is a movie about a girl who lives in poverty, is raped, abused, has children by her rapist, who's illiterate, who has everything going against her. Her mom's, like, an abusive woman who abuses the welfare state. And all she does is try to be a good mom
and go to school,
get an education. That's the movie.
That's what she does.
And all you're focusing on is the fact that she's fat.
What?
What is wrong with you? Fat people deserve, like, fat people are humans.
They are literally people.
You can literally have some fucking empathy for them and the situations they're going through. Like, being fat doesn't somehow disqualify them from having a problem.
Also, I guarantee you that every fat person realizes they're fat and hates it.
Yeah.
So your hatred of it isn't making it any better.
No.
And that's like, not convincing them to get better or
no,
something.
No, and I also hate when they're like, well, it's a health problem. And I'm like, when the fucking goddamn hell did you ever give a shit about someone else's health?
So true.
When in the, oh yeah, what about you? Do you fucking run every day? You drink your goddamn kale smoothies? I highly fucking doubt it. How would you feel if I came into your goddamn house and was like, you know, you really shouldn't be eating these pizza rolls. They're fucking bad for you. And I just criticize every goddamn thing you ate. That goes two ways, baby. Fat people know it's not healthy to be fat. Okay? They're aware. They don't need you to tell them. And the fact that people get so mad when fat people are treated like humans and are shown that they can still be loved and desired even when they're fat, that's not like a fucking radical idea that's gonna make fat people now want to be fat. That is not what's happening.
Not at all.
Fat, here's the thing. Being bigger, being, like, obese, obviously comes with a lot of health problems.
Definitely.
Fat people don't want to die of cardiac arrest. They don't want to die of, like, this stuff. They're aware. They know
the risks. They know what's happening.
They know the risks. And, like, at the end of the day, you think, like, the risk of their life is not enough. Like, plus, not only that, but, like, I think it's okay to treat them with some humanity. I think it's all right to treat fat people like humans because they'll be okay. Like, they're still, don't worry, it's not gonna, like, turn the trend to where every fit person
everyone
suddenly,
wants to be fat.
Everyone wants to be so obese that they, like, can't move. That's not what's going to happen. Don't worry. Like,
I guarantee that is not what's going to happen.
There's an entire show called My 600-Pound Life where all we basically do is watch in awe as fat people are dehumanized for the television. I think we're not to the point where anyone's trying to get there. Okay? Sometimes there are other reasons people are fat, and
sometimes they're health issues, sometimes because they can't afford healthy food.
At the end of the day, though, the real thing is that it's none of your fucking business. That's the real thing, is that regardless of the reason they're fat, by choice,
what does that have to do with you?
It has nothing to do with you, and you can have some goddamn basic empathy for a girl who's going through one of the shittiest situations I've ever seen portrayed in a film ever because she's fat.
Yeah, she deserved all that, you know, because she's fat.
Literally.
It's like, what?
I literally couldn't even stand to watch her pain because this movie wasn't entirely about how she was fat, so I couldn't stand to watch it. Yeah, fat people's one characteristic is not that they're fat.
That usually is a very small part of who they are as people.
Well, unfortunately, they don't see that, so. Yeah, this movie all in all just made me upset, but then what made me more upset was seeing people's reactions to the movie.
Definitely.
What made me even more upset than the movie was seeing how people reacted to this fictional character who went through some horribly, like, very real things, and the way that people felt about it.
And they don't like it because she's fat.
And black. You know, the two things that make you worthless.
And a woman.
Oh, and a woman. The three things that make you worthless.
Yes. And poor.
And poor. poor. All around just has no worth as a human being, I guess.
Apparently.
I see no win in her story because at the end of the day, she's still a poor, fat, black woman. And ultimately, what should have happened is she should have become a pretty, skinny, white woman that was rich.
Have you ever tried becoming a skinny, white woman who's rich?
Have you ever tried that? Because I would say the number one way to get out of your situation would be to do that. Well, yeah, but
we're trying to portray that we have a diverse audience, so if you're white tonight, could you just not be?
The orchestra of Broadway, baby. There's no black people there. Yeah, so, you know, if this made you mad, I hope so.
And yeah, it's upsetting.
I hope that if you're mad because you're grossed out that she's fat, that you stay mad. And if you're upset because that's a gross thing to think, then this is the podcast for you.
Yes, it
Congratulations.
Is. Congratulations.
You got to the right place.
You get a gold star.
So that's it. We're going to talk about An American Son next.
Yep.
On Patreon. We're still covering black creators,
yep.
baby.
Yep.
All right, guys.
Thanks. Bye.
Bye.